The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from AARP Magazine and also Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article from AARP Magazine, How to Find the Best Homeowners Insurance. Get protection for what may be your most valuable possession. Even though a home is the most valuable asset owned by most older Americans, many don't take the time to choose the right insurance to protect it. Almost 30% of U.S. homeowners have never switched insurers, reports the consulting firm Deloitte. Yet, coasting by with the coverage you picked up when you first bought your home and likely had more pressing matters on your mind can have unpleasant consequences. Nearly two-thirds of people have no idea what their homeowner's policy fully covers, and 45% of respondents to an industry survey said they'd had a claim denied because they lacked proper coverage. Whether you own or rent your home, these steps can help you weigh the merits of your current policy or shop around for one that's better suited to your needs and budget. Number one, know the terms. For the highest level of coverage, you want an all-risk or open perils policy. This type of insurance will cover property damage or loss incurred from all events, except those specifically excluded in the contract. More about that later. A named perils policy, on the other hand, will help out only in specific situations, usually making it more affordable. Policies can also differ in how they calculate the amount they'll pay out to cover damage or loss. Replacement cost value insurance is intended to reimburse you for the full cost of buying the exact or a similar version of what you've lost. Actual cash value insurance, however, provides a sum equal to your possessions, current worth, taking into account that they lose value over time. In other words, you'd likely receive less than you would with replacement cost coverage. Most standard home insurances provide replacement cost value coverage for the dwelling, but actual cash value coverage for your belongings. That means you'll have to shell out more if you want full replacement coverage on everything. Number two, check your insurer's math. The dollar amount listed in your policy that covers damage to your home's structure should reflect the current cost in your local market to rebuild your home from scratch, not its appraised value, its estimated sales price, or what you paid for it years ago. Loretta Werthers of the Insurance Information Institute, an industry trade group, recommends corroborating an insurer's suggested coverage limit by learning your area's per square foot building cost. You can get this figure from a local contractor, real estate agent, builders association, or insurance agent, then multiply it by the home's total square footage. We find that after a disaster, two-thirds of people are underinsured by an average of six figures, says Emily Rogan, senior program officer with the United Policyholders, an insurance consumer advocacy organization. People have to come up with creative ways to fill that gap to rebuild. Number three, know what's missing. Damage caused by flooding or earthquakes typically isn't covered in standard all-risk policies for owners and renters, so you need a separate policy for protection such as disasters. as these, says Douglas Heller, Director of Insurance for the Consumer Federation of America. Depending on your mortgage lender and location, you may be required to buy this extra coverage. To check if your area is considered high risk for flooding, consult the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Flood Map Service Center at msc.fema.gov. Even if you don't live in a high-risk spot, you may want to add this insurance since 25% of national flood insurance program claims come from areas with moderate to low risk. To assess your earthquake risk, see the U.S. Geological Service's hazard map for your state at usgs.gov. There's no simple rule for determining whether you need earthquake insurance. Just know that the lower the risk in your area, the lower the premium will be. Number four, cover your gaps. As your home ages, consider adding building code upgrade coverage, or as it's known, ordinance or law coverage. Standard homeowners insurance normally won't help with the cost of repairing or reconstructing the property to meet your area's current building regulations, says Rogan. So if coastal homes in your town now need to be elevated and yours is not, the rebuilding expense would fall on you. According to the United Policyholders, this addition will usually get you an extra 10% in dwelling coverage or a flat amount like $25,000 depending on your policy. You may also need to increase protection on the contents of your residence. Most home insurance policies set the amount of coverage at between 50 and 70% of your dwelling limit, while renters can typically select amounts ranging from $10,000 to $500,000. To determine how much you need, Heller recommends recording yourself as you walk through your home, describing what you see, when you bought it, and how much it cost. This will help you estimate the value of your most important possessions and provide a handy record should you need to file a claim. Or you can use a free home inventory app, such as one of those offered by Encircle or the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, NAIC, which will catalog items and store photos and receipts. United Policyholders also offers a more detailed spreadsheet. You can go to uphelp.org and search for how to create a home inventory. High-worth items such as a piece of art or an engagement ring will likely require special coverage. Number five, shop around. 70% of homeowners, Deloitte found, hadn't changed carriers in the prior 3 years. To improve your chances of nabbing the best coverage at the best price, get restless, says Heller. Ask for quotes from at least 3 different companies every 2 years. If you don't want to call insurers directly or visit their websites to obtain quotes, you can work with an insurance agent or broker. A captive agent will offer you products from a single company, while an independent agent or broker can provide options from more than one insurer. Number six, screen your insurer. Heller recommends checking an insurer's financial strength in case it will have to pay many claims at the same time, say after a big disaster. You can do this for free on the website of WEISS, that's W-E-I-S-S, ratings, at weissratings.com, which gives letter grades to different companies. To get a sense of how easy an insurer will be to work with, use the NAIC's search tool and see how it ranks on the group's complaint index. Number seven, shave your cost. Increasing your deductible and shopping around aren't your only options for saving money. Many insurers offer discounts for setting up automatic payments, opting for electronic billing, being a member of a certain credit union or professional organization, installing a new security system, or putting on a new roof, says Stephen Crutzen, Senior Director of the Insurance Intelligence Group at J.D. Power. Ask your insurer about discounts and share in any improvements you've done that have made your home safer or more resistant to damage. Also consider taking out multiple policies from the same insurer. Research from insurance.com and Quadrant Information Services found that bundling auto and home insurance with the same company saved people an average of 15%. And from Kiplinger Personal Finance, bye-bye bear. A new bull market became official in June, but it looks a little wobbly. A summer rally has closed the books on the bear market of 2022, but plenty of market experts remain skeptical about the new bull market. It became official in early June when the S&P 500 index closed 20% above its October 2022 bottom, the traditional indication that a new round of market gains is underway. The blue chip barometer closed at 4450 on June 30th. As stocks have continued to grind higher this year, a number of Wall Street analysts have become bull market converts, boosting their year-end forecasts for stock prices overall. Admittedly, we entered the year more cautious given the host of uncertainties the market faced. But it seems that all the doom and gloom that many others were forecasting have yet to come to fruition, says strategist Brian Belsky at BMO Capital. He now sees the S&P 500 at the 4550 level by year-end, up from a prior forecast of 4300. Strategists at Goldman Sachs boosted their year-end S&P 500 target to 4500 from 4000. Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist at investment research firm CFRA, reiterated the firm's original year-end forecast of 4575 for the index, but reset the firm's 12-month target to 4820, implying an 8% gain by June of 2024. If history is a guide, says Stovall, the prognosis for further gains from here is good. Since World War II, whenever the S&P 500 closed 20% above its prior bear market low, the index gained an average of 11.3% over the subsequent 5 months, before stumbling into a correction of 10% on average. Even with a correction of 12 months after crossing the new bull market threshold, the S&P 500 was higher by nearly 20%, says Stovall, rising in 12 of 13 instances. Red flags. And yet this young bull is anything but hard charging, and worrisome signs persist. We continue to see increasing warning flags that something is not right with this bull market, says longtime market historian Jim Stack, president of Investec Research. Many bull markets lift off from a V-shaped bottom that indicates stocks have reached extreme, oversold, and undervalued levels, he notes. Not this one. This has turned into a grueling struggle, says Stack, of the market's advance. The concentrated aspect of the market's rally has been disappointing, with most of the gains coming from a few big-name tech stocks. Through early June, the 10 largest tech stocks in the S&P 500, representing 25% of the benchmark's weighting, accounted for 95% of its gains, notes Sarah Malkin, chief investment officer of investment firm Nuveen. Shares in Apple closed out the first half at a record high, giving the stock a market value of more than $3 trillion. In recent weeks, stock gains have broadened a bit, but advances in small company stocks aren't confirming the rally in mega cap stocks. Small caps typically lead with some of the sharpest and largest gains in the first year of a new bull, says Stack. The small cap Russell 2000 index is a fraction of what it should be 8 months into a new bull market. Recession indicators continue to flash warning signs. I understand the contrarian instinct about the recession, that it's been the most telegraphed in history. So it's not going to happen, says Doug Ramsey, chief investment officer at money management firm Luthold Group. Nonetheless, he notes that an inverted yield curve, which occurs when short-term yields are higher than longer-term yields, has a good track record of predicting recessions, especially when you compare yields of three-month Treasury securities with those of 10-year notes. It has been 8 for 8 in predicting the last 8 recessions, he says. He and Stack also point to weakness in the U.S. Lending Economic Index, which tracks forward-looking indicators such as consumer sentiment to forecast turns in the economy. The index is currently predicting a recession within the next 12 months. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve's battle against inflation is far from over, with one or more interest rate hikes expected from the central bank before the end of the year. The outlook for corporate profits might be too optimistic, says Samir Samana, senior global strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. The market seems to be pricing in a rosy scenario for earnings. But if we're going to be in a highly volatile, higher inflation and higher rate environment where the Fed may or may not be done hiking their rates, then I don't want to pay price earning multiples that are all that high, he says. What to do now? Recognize that even if the bull market is off to a rocky start, it will find its legs eventually. We're not perma bears, says Samana. We do see brighter days ahead. For now, you'll find a good balance of risk and reward with high-quality holdings such as those found in exchange-traded fund J.P. Morgan U.S. Quality Factor, the symbol being JQUA, newly added to the Kiplinger ETF 20, the list of our favorite ETFs. If you're worried about hitching your hopes to just a handful of hot stocks, consider an index fund that weighs each holding equally so that a handful of Goliaths can't dominate. We see continued risk in mega cap growth stocks, says strategist of Bank of America Securities. We prefer the equal weight S&P 500 to the market cap weighted S&P 500. Bank of America recently pegged the return potential of the equal weight index as double that of the market capped one. Luthold's group, Ramsey, agrees. With an equal weight approach, which makes more room for more attractively priced small and mid-cap stocks in a portfolio, the average stock stands to do much better than the averages themselves over the next 3 to 5 years, he says. Invesco S&P 500 Equal Weight, or RSP, is a popular choice. The ETF has an expense ratio of 0.20%. And another article from Kiplinger Personal Finance. Make a plan to restart student loan repayments. A 3-year pause on federal loan payments ends in October. Here's how to prepare. If you're among the millions of borrowers who took advantage of the hiatus on federal student loan payments, it's time to tighten your belt. With the Supreme Court's June decision to strike down President Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness plan, which would have given qualifying borrowers up to $20,000 in federal student debt relief and repayments beginning in October, you'll need to make monthly payments again soon. The thought of parting with that cash might evoke the same sense of dread you felt during your final exams in college. Yet, just as in those college days, the more you prepare, the better off you'll be. Get the facts straight. A lot has happened since loan repayments and interest accruals were first suspended in early 2020. A pandemic swept the globe, a new U.S. president took office, and civilians went on the first trip to space without any professional astronauts. Much has likely happened in your personal life as well. Perhaps you moved, landed a new job, or got married. Maybe all three. In the meantime, there's a good chance you may not remember who your student loan servicer is or how much you owe. In addition, your home address, email address, and bank information may have changed. On top of that, you may have a new loan service provider or platform. More than 17 million accounts for federal student loans have been transferred, and more transfers either to different servicers or different servicing technology platforms are expected in the coming months, ultimately reaching more than 30 million accounts, according to a June report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Start by logging in to your new account at studentaid.gov to review the list of all of your federal loans and get details about them, such as the service provider's name and how much you've paid and your remaining balance. Make sure your contact information is correct so you'll receive important notices. You should also go to your service provider's website to review the financial information there and, if needed, update your personal data. Listing accurate contact information is crucial, says Mark Kentrauskwitz, a student loan expert and author of How to Appeal for More College Financial Aid. The repayment is going to restart regardless of whether you get those notices or not, he says. If you miss a payment, or if you're late, you'll be charged penalties and the interest will accrue. If you can't find answers to your questions online, call the Federal Student Aid Information Center at 1-800-433-3243. That's 1-800-433-3243. Or your loan provider for assistance. Congress didn't approve a call center-related funding request from the Department of Education, so hours of operation have been cut. Don't procrastinate on making this call, or you may need to wait to get a live person on the line. Reassess your budget. During the pause in payments, many borrowers use funds previously designated for student loans for other purposes. It's now time to take a hard look at where your money is going and, if necessary, slash your expenses. Track your spending for a month and scrutinize those numbers. Kentrauskwitz recommends and determine which is needed or mandatory and what is want-based or discretionary. Some of those discretionary purchases may have to go by the wayside so you can afford your loan repayment. Make sure you signed up to have payments transferred from your bank to the loan servicer automatically. With automatic payments, not only are you less likely to be late with a payment, but you'll also get a quarter of a percentage point interest rate reduction. And review your options. The DOE offers several repayment options, each with its own nuances. They include the standard repayment plan, the graduated repayment plan, and the income-driven repayment plans, or IDRs. With IDRs, payments are based on your income. Your loan servicer or a financial advisor can walk you through your choices and explain the pros and the cons of each. The DOE's loan simulator is also a useful tool. It will let you see the plans you might qualify for and help you estimate your monthly and total loan payments. To protect against pay cuts, furloughs, and unemployment, federal loan borrowers may want to consider an IDR plan, says Ross Reskin, Chief Learning Officer at the Investments and Wealth Institute. You can adjust your monthly payments to as little as zero if your income is low enough without having to go through the process of negotiating with a bank or lender, he says. Income-driven plans have additional benefits, such as potential loan forgiveness after 20 to 25 years of payments. However, you may also end up paying more in interest in the long run. If you're already enrolled in an IDR plan, compare your interest, your current income to what it was the last time you had to recertify, which was likely before the payment pause. If your income is lower now, submit income information to have the monthly payment amount adjusted downward, Riskin says. As you explore repayment options, be wary of any offers to refinance, as the only way to refinance a federal loan is to take out a new private loan to pay off the existing student loan balance, Riskin says. Some private loans have variable interest rates, while federal student loans come with fixed rates, although a private loan may have a lower rate. And as we wrap up our episode today, we'll try to get in most of this article. This is from Kiplinger.com, adding users to your credit card. If you want to give your child, say a college student heading to campus this fall, a leg up on developing a credit history, considering adding him or her as an authorized user on your credit card. An authorized user is issued a card that is linked to your account, and the user can make purchases with the credit card in the same way that the account holder does. Authorized users do not have to undergo a credit check, so it's a good option for someone who has a thin credit profile. You can also add your spouse, another relative, or even a friend as an authorized user, as long as they meet the card issuer's age requirements. Even if they don't use the card, authorized users can benefit from account activity that contributes to a positive credit history, such as on-time bill payments and a low credit utilization ratio, which is the amount of credit used expressed as a percentage of the card's limit. And we are out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to listen to us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.